You're tuned into Assigned Sex Unarchived, the podcast told by us, for us. I'm your non-binary cousin, Sean Dawson, and this is a safe space where we're honest about what it means to show up as Black, trans, and genderqueer. Today I've got TJ, Nandi, and an anonymous guest with me, and we're unpacking spirituality, religion, and faith through the eyes of people who grew up in church. Look, I know a lot of us sit with this question. What happens when the place that taught you God also taught you to hate yourself? Let's get into it.
I would say I am very much 100% culturally Christian, but I am not a believer at all. And I think sometimes folks feel the need to like distance themselves from the culture and all the other part of it. I know I can't help it. Like in the way I talk and the reactions I have to things is very much rooted of being raised culturally Christian. But as far as like any belief in really any religious ideology or spirituality, I feel, you know, love my friends who are doing indigenous and traditional African religions. That all just seems like a lot of work, you know, a lot of reading, and you got to learn a lot about ancestors. There's altars. It just sounds like a lot of work. So I'm agnostic. We'll say that. I'm agnostic. I'm sure there's something out there, but I don't want to do the work to figure it out.
I am in the same boat. I do not want to do the work. It's like adulting is already enough for me. So like adding something else to the list to like learn and figure out just isn't for me. I'm like all over the place. So I grew up in church and I still hold the values that I was raised around to my core. But I'm definitely not religious and I'm more so spiritual, and I do acknowledge a higher power, a God. And then I also acknowledge other mystical, whatever you would want to call them. So it's like, oh, thank you God, thank you earth, thank you sky, thank you moon, thank you stars. Like yeah, but I no hard feelings, because I was raised Christian. I don't harbor any hard feelings towards Christianity. I just know it, practicing religion doesn't work for me. I'm not cut from that cloth. And yeah, that's it.
I think I'm somewhere in between TJ and Lady. I'm definitely culturally Christian. I say amen all the time as like an agreement statement. It's just something about me, but I'm not a Christian at all. I guess I would identify more as agnostic, because I think there's like something bigger than me. What is it? I don't know. And then I would consider myself like a hoodoo practitioner. Yeah, I'm like a hoodoo practitioner. I do a little bit of conjure, and yeah.
All right. Nandi, we'll stay with you. Take me back to little Nandi, like the kid in the pews. What did a Sunday look like for you?
Oh man, Sundays were long. My mom was a minister of music or like choir director or whatever. So I spent my Sundays either at church all day, so from like 8:30 in the morning for Sunday school until like 4 o'clock. If there was a special service after, also had to be at that too. Sometimes we would go to multiple churches on a Sunday because my mom had to play one early service and then she would play like the regular service. So Sundays for me was just at church, singing along. I would try to participate. I love the music part of it. But yeah, I'm definitely singing along in the pews because I know all the songs, and I'm also ready to go when my mama says it's time to go.
You're real. Yeah. Lady, I mean, I know a little bit more about you. So what type of church did you grow up in?
I grew up in a non-denominational Christian household, and that was my dad. My dad's a preacher, and both my parents, my dad and mom, are preachers. And my dad's church was Christianity. They practiced Christianity.
Okay. And what does Sunday look like for you at growing up?
I remember more than just Sundays. It seemed like church was like every other day. There was something with church or choir rehearsal or Bible study or going to some service, and then there was Sunday, which was like the big shebang where, you dress formal and then you go to this place. My dad's church, they had there were three different residences. And I vividly remember the second one more. It was like this old style church, and it was kind of like what you would see in a movie, like one of those, it's like really big and it's kind of scary looking on the inside, like you think it's haunted. So I just remember being there. I just remember once a week having to be there, and I wasn't paying attention to anything. I was just running the halls and just like being crazy. And then, as we got older, the church moved to its longer term resident in a different neighborhood. And it was just like there's Sunday service, then you might get some food in between, and then you have to go to someone's other church that evening. And it just sucked the life out of your Sunday. And of course, the Saturdays were like studies at church and stuff like that. There was a lot of church.
I see.
Yeah.
TJ, your Sundays was the same. You was in church all day on Sunday.
Yeah, I guess, it differs Sunday by Sunday, and also like with age things. Definitely remember there's like the old church and the new church, but we'll talk about, I guess, more of like the newer church when they moved to a larger facility. My dad as well, is a pastor. My dad became a pastor the year, like 6 months after I was born. So like pretty much my whole entire life. I remember like Sunday school. So, having gone to Sunday school and really liking it, and being a person who liked to read, I was able to like lead other, the younger people Sunday school. And then I would also led me to be in charge of, like, not in charge, be one of the people who could do the nursery. So I always found ways to get out of church, like, and so everybody was up in there. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna help out with the kids, right? So I have to sit through that particular function. Our 4 Sundays where they would do like choir, like the youth Sundays. I to this day, I can't stand. Don't invite me to when no children are singing. I need adults. We ain't practicing on my ears. But they used to make me be in the choir. Then eventually, later, I would just stand there or like mouth the words. I wouldn't do anything. And so then they're like, okay, you can be a or other stuff like that. I think I found church to be more fun when you're like being able to be friends or finding like other activities where I didn't have to necessarily be inside and like listen to everything. And I definitely did a lot of that kind of stuff. I remember even in like maybe 4th grade, they're like, oh, you can go with the kindergartners to Sunday school because you can help out with the kindergarten teacher and you can help them read and this, that, and the other. So I always finding that, some church services will go to visit other churches, some local, some in Miami. I love it when we went to Miami, the other church might feed us, but I would always like hop the fence. This one particular church, so I would go to KFC and I come back on the bus because we had to take the bus down there with my own food. So it was there. I was at church a lot, but I was also finding like other ways to like do me and make an enjoyable experience.
When you
I'll bring
said,
books to church too. I'll be reading my books.
when you said that you were a usher, I just kept picturing you in your usher outfit
with the finger. I
with the
put,
finger.
yeah, pointing people,
Yeah.
directing them, being like, give me that gum.
Right.
I know you
wasn't
that
doing
strict.
that. I know you wasn't doing that.
So it's time for a little Black, trans, and genderqueer history. Today we're centering the story of Lucy Hicks Anderson. Lucy knew she was a girl by the time she was 9 years old. Her mama was a little bit concerned, so she took Lucy to a doctor, and the doctor basically said, let her live as a girl. So as a teenager, Lucy changed her name,
left school, and started doing domestic work to take care of herself. She did that kind of work for years and years until she was able to own and run a whole brothel in Oxnard, California. But in 1945, there was an outbreak of venereal disease in Oxnard. And the people were saying it started at Lucy's spot. So the city ordered everybody who worked there get a medical exam. During that exam, they clocked Lucy. Once they discovered that, they tried to destroy her. They voided her marriage, and then they charged her with perjury, saying that she lied on her marriage license by signing that there was no legal objection to the marriage. Both Lucy and her husband ended up being tried by the feds. During that trial, Lucy did not back down. She told them, a person can look like one sex and actually be another. She said, I defy any doctor in the world to prove that I am a woman. That was bad. She also told reporters, I have lived, dressed, acted just what I am, a woman. Instead of sending her straight to jail, they put her on probation for 10 years. 10 years of probation is wild, by the way. But that wasn't even the end of it. The government decided that she had been illegally getting money as a soldier's wife because her husband was in the army. So Lucy and her husband were tried again, this time for fraud, and they were convicted. After she got out of prison, they wouldn't even let her move back to Oxnard. So she relocated to Los Angeles, and that's where she lived until she passed in 1954. Lucy Hicks Anderson was a Black trans woman who insisted on her womanhood in a world that tried everything to deny it. She was the first trans person in U.S. history to fight for marriage rights in court. Lucy's story is a reminder that we've always been here, and we're not going anywhere.
As far as when you said my body, I remember how church reminded me that my body was changing. Because I remember there would be deacons who never paid me any mind. It was just like, whatever. And then like suddenly one day shift and it's like, hey, can I get a hug? How you doing? So, like, it was like this whole, now I see you. But, and so that was one of the ways. I remember there was this minister that I could not stand at the church for so many reasons. But he would tell me, he was a police officer and he later got arrested for something. Anyway, that's not the point. But he would be like, oh, you need to wear, you need to wear longer dresses, right? You're causing the boys in the church to like have like thoughts and sin. I would always be like, you know, I could wear a paper bag and people are going to have whatever thoughts. But I was like, if you have an issue with what I'm wearing, I'm a child, right? Talk to my parents, talk to the people who are buying it. I just remember a lot of conversations about my body. I cut my hair maybe in like 10th grade and another minister was like, you know, the hair is a woman's glory. And I was like, again, clearly you're not going up to my father, who's the pastor, who's, you know, is your boss, and having these conversations about my body to him, but you feel so really comfortable and emboldened. So less about my transness. I think my body just, I can feel the differences of how people approach me and about my bodies, the comfortability that people had telling me things are about my body. I think that made me feel just highly uncomfortable and just felt like it was always just really inappropriate.
Damn, that's fucked up. I'm sorry. I'm pissed. I'm upset for you.
That's people.
Oh my gosh. And it's not even religion. It's the people that make it what it is and whatever, because it's such a bad rep. So I apologize. Anyway, for me, so MTFT girl here, I was never directly, so how I felt in my body was kind of weird. I always had this weird, interesting relationship with my body where there was always a disconnect. So in church, I didn't necessarily stop there. I would look at what the women were wearing and I'd be like, oh, that's really nice. Like I love fashion and clothes. And so I would be looking at the Sunday fits and maybe the heels or maybe the jeans. Cause like my dad's church was very Come As You Are. So sometimes people would be in there in sweatsuits and like whatever. And so I was just paying attention to the fashion and then just longing and yearning to wear something that felt more authentically expressive for how I felt on the inside. I did not like wearing suits. Oh my gosh. And the older I got, the harder it became to wear a suit. I was just like, I cannot do this anymore. Like, I am not, this is not, this ain't me. My body is not feeling this. My mind isn't feeling this. Yeah, it was tough. Like, as a kid, though, it's all about play and to T's point, finding ways to occupy the time and make fun of, you know, the circumstance that you're in. Because when you're a kid, going to church is boring. Unless you're in Sunday school or you're in, like, the kids program with the other kids. And then y'all can have, like, share that camaraderie and be kids and, like, be messy and all that stuff. But, yeah, wearing suits definitely did not make me see my body in a positive way. Because I never saw my body even though genetically it's a male body, but I never saw that my body as being the body of a boy or a man.
Nandi, was there ever a moment for you when, like, something shifted in church and you were like, hey, like, God's not the problem here. These people are actually the problem.
Oh, I never thought necessarily that, like, God was the problem. I always knew that it was people that was the problem because even though when I was little, my mom, like, played in churches as, like, her side hustle job, we didn't go to a church until I was, like, 10 years old because my mom actually was kind of, like, put out from her home church that she grew up in when she got pregnant with me because she wasn't pregnant. And so my mom had, like, a lot of church hurt and always kind of talked about that it was, like, people. It deeply, like, scarred her and, like, how she navigated, like, new churches. We visited a lot of churches, but I never thought, like, oh, like, it's definitely, like, the quote-unquote God that's the problem. I actually do think it is the God that they believe in that is the problem because they think they're mirroring what they're being taught, right? So I do think there is some fault to be laid there with the version of God that people align themselves with. But people are also deeply flawed. And so is the God that they believe in, right? Like, the God that these people believe in is deeply flawed like them. It's not a perfect God like they always say that it is. So I never thought it was about, yeah, the God per se. I think Black people's survival is, like, divine. I think, like, Black creation and imagination and resilience is divine. I think divine is something that's not always, like, a tangible thing, but sometimes we can see a tangible form of it. But those are the things I really, like, rest in as divine, as, like, kind of, like, the ways we find, like, gifts in life itself and survival and, like, the lessons that we learn. I kind of find divinity there. Yeah, and relationships, of course. That's, like, my main thing.
TJ, if you could go back and sit with little TJ, what would you tell them now about God, about spiritual homes? What would you whisper to in their ear?
Good question. I don't know. I'm like, what would I have needed to hear? Keep questioning. I think keep asking questions is probably what I would say. One of the things I used to also do was, like, write notes to my dad. I think my daddy probably regrets allowing me to ask as many questions as he did, but I would, like, have notes at the end of his sermon. Like, I didn't buy this. This didn't make sense. And then we'll like kind of discuss. And sometimes, okay, I was like, okay, I get it now. Or I was like, I still don't get it. I think I was always questioning things as a young person. I used to be like, why we gotta say amen? So I would always say amen at the end, and like maybe leaning more into it. And then there was a point where I think sometimes doctrine had got heavy, but always leaning back to like that curious person as a child to keep asking questions. So I was like, if I was raised, you know, Muslim, I would think Islam was the way. Like, what do you mean that this is the only way? This is the only truth. Christianity is only by circumstances that I even got here. Yeah, keep asking questions.
I feel like Christians don't like when you ask questions.
Yeah, I think my dad regrets it. Yeah. Should have like struck that. It down. It's one way.
Can't be asking questions.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my dad, I pop questions and he likes them. My dad and my mom. My mom is super scholarly with it. And my dad is, you know, he's chill. He's really chill about it. Like, I'll probe them and they're my parents specialize more so in street ministry. So there was a little bit more like, I guess, like lax in their energy, and they would just be ready for whatever someone would come their way with, like, well, why this, why that? And they would just sit there and just like engage in a dialogue. I think we did that recently. I was talking to my dad about atheists, about like back in December, and it was just like a really chill back and forth conversation.
Actually, the last time I went to my father's church, he said something that I found transphobic, because Father's Day, this was 2017. And I said, you know what? he hasn't apologized. We had conversations about it, but it's cool. Like, you know, he can grow. He can do whatever he got to do. But guess who will never see me in that particular church again? My friend had a funeral, and I totally... It wasn't until like I was in the car, in the parking lot, I was like, oh shit, I gotta go into a church. I don't go into churches. I've been to like I went to like Yvette Flinders Church when I was in like what's the name of that place in Oakland, and like I'll be down to go to like open churches, but it's Sundays I want to sleep. Like, it's just not a part of my.
You feel me? Like, let me. It's my day my off. Agenda. Yes. Yeah, so let me chill. Let me have my weekend. Yes.
Well, I'm constantly lobbying to be your Easter and or Christmas and or Mother's Day minister of music. Let me lead your choirs through 1 month of rehearsals so that you can have the most hittin'est Mother's Day, Easter, or Christmas service. I will then disappear until the next time. But I don't like church, and like but I do love places that have rockin' praise and worship. Now, my problem is I cuss and I throw ass while I'm like clapping and stuff. So I do kind of, I be like, sing, bitch, and I forget where I'm at. So I don't go to church like a lot, but I did go to church last Easter at my daddy's church because their band was rocking. Unfortunately, the choir not as rocking. They only really did one good song. So I was like, yeah, this is why I don't come. And yeah, I've been, since Richard Smallwood died, I watched that on YouTube. That was like going to church for me. So that was good enough. I do mostly YouTube church and listening to Spotify, my worship playlist.
There was this quote it says something to the effect of when you're young, you fight for freedom, when you're old, you cry for mercy, or something like that. And I've watched my parents grow older together and become these elders and really become softer in their thinking. Not that it was like, so I forgot to mention this earlier when we were talking about being comfortable in the body. No one ever directly approached me. So, like, yeah, I started consciously growing my hair out in seventh grade when, like, boys and girls were rocking braid-downs. So I was like, oh, shit, they're doing it and they're doing it. So let me jump on this bandwagon so I can, like, live my best girlish life in my head and have hair. So I started growing my hair out in seventh grade, and it would be braided. And sometimes I would gel it down and mat it down thinking I was, like, Lil' Kim in the Junior Mafia video. And Players Anthem. And so no one, and eventually the hair got longer and it would usually be braided, but then the older I got, I would wear it straight. Give me a nice relaxer and I would, you know, whatever. But no one ever said anything to me directly, but here and there and every now and then they would press my mom. Someone would say something to my mom and it would be like every couple years or so. And I think she would internalize it and not say anything. And then later on, she would say something. She'd be like, you know, I have these people coming up to me in church and da 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 da, and you need to stop acting like that. And I'm like, but the relationship now, like, I left when I was, soon as I finished undergrad, like, soon as I did that, I was just like, I'm taking my life. My life is my life now. I'm going to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, however I want to do it. I started transitioning that year. There was a lot of friction between me and my parents when I started. There was a lot of friction. And the solution was, you know what? I'm out. Like, I'm a peace out. I'm going to go do this. This is going to happen. It can either happen with or without your support, with or without your love. We can have a relationship or we cannot have a relationship. And I bounced. I met a dude off of BGC Live, which is a throwback. Before there was Grindr, there was BGC Live. And Tamie, before all of those, there was BGC Live, which I miss and I pray that they bring it back one day. But anyway, I had connected with a guy who lived in Queens on BGC. And he invited me to go and stay with him in New York. So I went to New York and I gave my parents that space and that distance, and they felt it. They could, because I no longer live there. Y'all can't control, you can't, that friction about what I'm doing, me taking my life and having the control and power over my life to do what it is I want to do without your permission, without your consent, without your approval, that's mine. And so you can either process it from afar and I just go do my thing and y'all do y'all's, or we can come together and be in each other's lives. And they chose the latter. And so now we're in this really great place. It's pretty sweet. I love them. I'm going to see them in like 2 weeks. And like, mommy sick because my dad's going out of the country for 2 weeks. And my mom's over 70 and she do not need to be in that house by herself because sometimes she falls. But we're in a really good place. And we I can talk to my parents about a lot of things. They're very understanding. I talk to my mom about a lot of things because moms want to know. My dad doesn't want to know everything. He wants to know the basics. He doesn't need to know the details. So like, I don't know, he doesn't want to know that. Yeah, I know you did some strip club work, like, but my mom will be like, okay, so what was that experience like and what happened and how were the other, you know, like all that stuff. So we're in a really good place now, and I'm very thankful because at their core my parents are very loving people, and so with that I've seen like the good side of Christianity just from watching my parents just be annoyingly kind and gracious and forgiving and good to others, even when they backstab them or they do all these things. My parents always live in love, and I'm thankful that that applies to their children. As crazy as we are, like, they still love us. So it's we're in a really, really good place now.
I think it's also like listening to like all of y'all is awesome, that like everybody's found a way to like have a conversation with the divine, like outside of like institutional church. And I think that's what I was just trying to bring to this episode, because I feel like there's a lot of queer trans people in church and they feel like they're not supposed to, like, something's wrong with them and they gotta fix themselves.
But also, shame, like, church wouldn't even be, yeah, and church wouldn't even happen without queer people. That's, like, something I think about all the time. It's like, I grew up with so many queer people in church. The first queer people I ever saw were, like, ministers of music, choir directors. Like, those are the first people I ever saw. So, like, church doesn't have, like, a chokehold on the divine, you know? They don't own that.
Yeah, I'll also say, I think even now, I have so many friends who are queer and trans who are pastors who are ministers who are like we don't, they don't actually have to go back to a church with regressive theology. I see, you know, traditional churches who are becoming more progressive with their theology, and there is always like growth. I think like Lady talked about with her family and her parents. I remember my mom, I was with my mom someplace. Oh, we were like the movie, and it was like a commercial for Power Rangers. I said, you still think it's demonic? Because we can watch Power Rangers when I was a kid, it was demonic and evil. And she's like, I've grown, right? Like, give me a space to grow. And I was like, oh, yeah. She's not the same person or understanding, you know, with the 90s, everything was demonic, right? And now I'm here in like 2000 something else, give people space to grow. Just like churches and theological spaces are growing and are, but, you know, it's important to push folks too.
All right, y'all, that's all I got for today. If this episode dragged you a little bit or hugged you a little bit, please share it with someone you love or that one person you know that really, really needs to hear it. And if you're Black, trans, or genderqueer and you're listening like, okay, I got something to say too, hit me up. I'm always looking to sit down with more of us for future episodes. You can find me, your non-binary cousin, Sean Dawson, on all platforms at I Am S. Dawson. Y'all be safe out there, and I'll catch you on the next episode.